Vasudevayam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevayam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevayam. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 1, Text 41. Yena svadamni ami bhava raja sattvatama maya guna nama kriya rupai vibhavyante yathatatam. Yena svadamyami bhava raja sattvatamo maya gunanama kriya rupair vibhavyante yathatatam. Yena svadamyami bhava raja sattvatamo maya gunanama kriya rupair vibhavyante yathatatam. Yena svadamyami bhava raja sattvatamo maya gunanama kriya rupair vibhavyante yathatatam. Ladies, please. Yenam, by whom? Narayan. Svadamni, although in his own place, the spiritual world, Ami, all these, Bhava, manifestations, Raja Sattva Tama Maya, created by the three modes of material nature, compassion, goodness, and ignorance. Guna, qualities. Nama, names. Kriya, activities. Rupai, and with forms. Devavyante, are variously manifested. Yathatatam, exactly to the right point. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Translation. The Supreme Cause of all causes, Narayan, is situated in His own abode in the spiritual world. But nevertheless, He controls the entire cosmic manifestation according to the three modes of material nature, sattva guna, rajo guna, and tamo guna. In this way, all living entities are awarded different qualities, different names such as Brahman, Kshatriya, and Vaishya, different duties according to the Vanashram institution, and different forms. Thus, Narayan is the cause of the entire cosmic manifestation. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Vedas inform us, Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate natatsamas chab yadikashtradrishyate parasya shaktir vividaiva sruyate svabhaviki jnana bala kriyacham. From the Sveta Svatara Upanishad 6.8. Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is almighty, omnipotent. He has multifarious energies, and therefore He is able to remain in His own abode and without endeavor supervise and manipulate the entire cosmic manifestation through the interaction of the three modes of material nature, sattva guna, rajoguna, and tamoguna. These interactions create different forms, bodies, activities, and changes, which all occur perfectly. Because the Lord is perfect, everything works as if He were directly supervising and taking part in it. Atheistic men, however, being covered by the three modes of material nature, cannot see Narayan to be the supreme cause behind all activities, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 13, Tribir gunam mayir bhavar ebi sarvam idam jagat mohitam nahi janati mam ebhya param avyayam, which means, quote, deluded by the three modes, the whole world does not know me, who am above the modes and inexhaustible, unquote. Because unintelligent agnostics are mohita, illusion by the three modes of material nature, they cannot understand that Narayan, Krishna, is the supreme cause of all activities. As stated in Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachid Ananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam, which means Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the supreme controller. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin, for He is the prime cause of what? Of all causes, yes. So here we have the Yamadutas speaking eloquently, a very lofty philosophy, the Vedic philosophy, as they have received it from their spiritual master, Yamaraj, who, as we know, is one of the 12 Mahajans, or authorized speakers, authorized knowers, authorized doers of the Bhakti Yoga system. In other words, when they speak, we can rely upon their words as being authoritative, beneficial, and as if coming from God Himself, since they are simply transmitting that which they have heard. And Yamaraj, as we know, is a very illustrious personality, and he has a very responsible position in that he has to assign to the souls that are brought to him by his servants, the Yamadutas, different positions, either in the lower planets or in the hellish planets. Or he may send them to the heavenly planets. It is mentioned in the later purports that Yamaraj is almost omniscient, almost in the sense that he gets his guidance directly from Krishna. So when he looks at someone, all their virtues, all their vices, and all the reactions that they should be given, either good or bad, flash through his mind as coming from the Supreme Lord, and he can then give his judgment or his direction, and the souls are then sent to different places according to their past merits or demerits. So Yamaraj is a very important personality in the system of running the universe and sending people where they should go to either punish them or to either please them according to the necessities based upon their previous actions. So therefore the Yamadutas, although they may look somewhat grotesque, they still have a great knowledge of this Vedic philosophy. Unfortunately, they were not told, or if they were told, then they forgot, that a person who is dying and who repeats the holy name of the Lord offenselessly, faithfully, should not be taken to Yamaraj, but rather he should be allowed to either continue to live or to allow the Vishnudutas to take him back to the spiritual world. And that is because when a person chants the holy name of the Lord when he is dying, and if he chants it innocently and offenselessly, faithfully, then whatever reactions he has acquired, by reactions I mean sinful reactions that he has acquired from sinful activities that he performed during his lifetime, have been eradicated, washed away, completely gone. Therefore, in effect, his soul has in effect been cleaned of all the necessary reactions. This does not mean that all his sinful tendencies are gone. Not at all, because as we will see from the progression of this story, what happens is that he does not go back immediately to the spiritual world. What happens is that he gets a, so to speak, new lease on life. Instead of dying, he comes back into his body. And as a result of the blessings of the Vishnudutas, and that blessings came by their association and by the conversation that they had with the Yamadutas, his consciousness was awakened to higher consciousness. Remember, his consciousness had been quite low previously because he had been associating with a prostitute for approximately 63 years. And he had done criminal activities just to support this prostitute in his home so that he could continue in his sexual pleasures that she would give him. And this addiction that he had caused him to become so attached to the pleasure that he would do anything and everything to continue in his sense gratification. Anything and everything means he would rob a person, he would connive, he would swindle. He would mug a person. He had no compunction. He had no conscience. Which shows us that when we become very controlled by and conquered by the desire for sense pleasure, and it becomes the end-all and be-all of our life, then what happens is that... Outside, okay. But I was just wondering where it was coming from. So the problem is that yet if we have no control over it, then it controls us, it enslaves us. And a slave, as we know, can never be happy because he's bound to do what he does. He's whipped to do what he does. He has to do what he does. So no slave likes to be a slave. He likes to be free. So Ajamil, because of his need for, I shouldn't say his need, his want for sense pleasure with his prostitute wife, the result was that he lost all sense of sensitivity, all sense of conscience. When he was younger, when he was 20, he was a Brahmin. He performed brahminical activities. He followed regulative principles. He spoke nicely. He was well-behaved. He respected his and took care of his parents. He showed proper respect to his wife. And so he was an ideal person, but something along the line happened. And what it was is that one day when he was out in the woods gathering fruits and wood for the family, for the house, he saw in the forest some low-class man consorting with a low-class prostitute, and they were laughing and they were drunk and they were giggling, and somehow it excited the dormant lust of his heart. And he could not get this scene out of his mind. And it became such an obsession that he felt he must have that prostitute. He must make her his own, so to speak. And that was the beginning of his fall down, which became worse and worse as time went on, until he reached a point where he didn't even know what was right and what was wrong. He thought what was wrong was right and what was right was wrong. The purpose of a story like this is not really to tell a very wonderful, imaginative, and poetic story. It is to teach us a very valuable, very important lesson. This is for us. And when we hear about Ajamil's plight and his difficulties, his trials and his tribulations, we should not think that that's happened to him out there, and that can never happen to me. I'm above this, I'm beyond it. I practice the four regulative principles. I come to the morning program, Mangal Artik. I come to Guru Puja. I come to the class. I read the scriptures. I even come to the evening program. I do everything right. I chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds. So Ajamil was also following these principles. But somehow, and that's what I want to deal with in this particular talk, somehow he still fell down. There was some weakness there. Something he did not do which could have saved him, which could have protected him and prevented him from falling into this miserable situation. And that something is all important, because even though we may be practicing everything and anything in our devotional regimen, our devotional program, one important factor may be missing. And if that factor is missing, then everything can, as we say, be blown to hell. That one factor is so important, and I'm going to get into that in a few moments. Because it's more than merely doing things, or even just thinking things. There is a certain mood, a certain attitude, a certain understanding that has to be accompanying all those wonderful processes. And it's imperative that that mood and that attitude, and that understanding accompany all of these practices, which we'll get into. Again, getting back to Ajamil, he had lost all conscience. But after the Vishnu Dutas, the servants of Lord Vishnu, came and had a debate with the servants of Yamaraj and made it very clear that Ajamil was now sinless because he had chanted the holy name of the Lord, Narayan, even without intending to call the Lord, intending to call only his son Narayan, that as a result of simply calling the name Narayan, and he called his son several times, and he called him because he was in a state of desperation. He knew he was dying. And his child was very dear to him. And he wanted to look at his child. He wanted to touch him. He wanted to see him because he loved him. So he shouted out, Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. He didn't shout it to wipe away his sinful reactions. He wasn't even thinking of that. All he wanted to do was be close to his son, to be near him. And it was very interesting, as we note in one of the purports, that it was not an accident that he named his son Narayan. It was part of the plan of the Supreme Lord. The Lord never forgot the devotional service that he had performed in his earlier years, 63 years previously. Which is interesting because it shows that whatever we do, as Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do this as an offering unto me. And if you do so, then you will come back to me eventually. So the Lord never forgot Ajamil's loving devotional service. And he felt beholden or obliged to his devotee to save him, notwithstanding the low qualities that Ajamil cultivated or acquired during the period of his life. So he inspired him from within to name the son Narayan. This was very important, because that would be the means for his salvation. Of course, Ajamil, after the debate between the Vishnu Dutas and the Yama Dutas, he came back to his senses, and he could have continued with the prostitute if he wanted to do that. But he was awakened. He was spiritually enlivened by that conversation and by that association. And what he knew when he was young was revived. And he knew at that point how wrongly he had turned and what he must do now to make it all right. So he knew at that point that he had gone terribly bad, and that he would have to do much to redeem himself in the eyes of the Lord. The Lord had given him a second chance, had given him a new beginning, so to speak. And if he decided to utilize that new beginning, then he could, yes, go back home, back to Godhead, and fulfill the true purpose of human life. But if he decided to continue with his pleasure, with his prostitute, then he would just again become degraded and probably go to hell. So what happened was that he chose the right thing because his mind was enlightened. He left the woman with whom he had been living for so many years, and he traveled to Haridwar. And there he joined one of the Vishnu temples, and he began chanting the holy names of the Lord continuously, night and day, purifying his body, his mind, his feelings, removing all the lower modes of nature, and developing pure love for the Supreme Lord, especially since he felt so obliged to Krishna for having bailed him out or gotten him out of this perilous condition. If the Vishnu Dutas had not come, then he probably would have been thrown into some of the darkest regions of hell and suffered immensely. But instead of suffering, he acquired transcendental consciousness. And in transcendental consciousness, as one grows in this, one acquires transcendental or inner peace or inner bliss, inner strength, inner freedom, inner love, inner happiness, all innermost, because One is chanting with a feeling of devotion, a feeling of affection, a feeling of dedication, a feeling of complete thankfulness and gratitude. When a devotee chants in the mood of gratitude or in the attitude of gratitude, it goes very far in touching the heart of the Supreme Lord. The Lord is moved when He sees that the devotee is so appreciative, so thankful for all that the Lord has given him. That mood of thankfulness is compensated by the Lord, by Krishna, by injecting Himself, His own love, into the soul of the devotee. And when that love of the Lord is injected into the soul of the devotee feels it. He feels it in the form of this transcendental bliss and transcendental peace. And so Ajamil, he became so overcome and overwhelmed in ecstasy from his chanting, that when it was time for him to leave this world, a chariot came down for him. And he got on that chariot, which would take him back home, back to Godhead, to the spiritual world. So how fortunate he was. He took the right decision in renouncing his home, renouncing the pleasure of his prostitute wife, if you want to call it that. And he then went forth and achieved the true goal of life. I mentioned a few moments ago that this pastime that we're reading here is not merely a fanciful, wonderful story just to make us go right, but it's really about us. We are potentially as vulnerable, and maybe even more so considering the environment we live in, as Ajamil, to fall down. We have to take the position that this could happen to me, because it has happened to so many wonderful devotees that I knew. Sannyasis, spiritual masters, governing board commissioners, and just generally good devotees. It happened to so many of them. And I always wondered, why would this happen? They were doing everything right. They were reading all the books. They were giving classes which was so impactive, which was so dynamic, which was so overflowing with devotional flavor. How could this happen? So it came to me, as I mentioned in my last talk, that there's this spirit of rebellion in all of us to rebel against regimentation, to rebel against being corralled, being compelled. There's a certain false freedom that one feels from that. That was in my last talk. But this time I want to talk a little more about another aspect. And that is, if we perform all of these different techniques, processes, the chanting of the holy name, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, and all of this, if we practice this, but we do not do it in a mood of complete appreciation, and by appreciation I mean that my life could be completely, my life could be so broken down. I could be so depressed. I could be so anxious. I could be so disturbed. I could be so unfortunate, and yet I have been given this holy name of the Lord, which is none different from Krishna. And when I chant this name of the Lord, I'm associating with the Supreme Lord. What a mercy! What a benediction! What a blessing! Who am I to receive such a great, such a fantastic offering by Krishna? So when a devotee begins to chant, or he does his puja, or he's on the altar, and he feels so insignificant, so small, so tiny, and so unworthy of this wonderful benediction, this great blessing, well then, the Lord is very, very pleased to see this. Because the devotee is taking is in a rightful position. The position that he's recognizing his smallness, his tininess, his insignificance, which is the soul. The soul is very tiny. And in its native or its natural state, it's spiritual. But because it's tiny and it's also weak, it can be covered by material energy. Now the Lord protects His devotees. He says, those who always worship Me with exclusive devotion, meditating on My transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I destroy. I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. He also says, to those who are constantly devoted to serving Me with love, I give them the understanding by which they may come to Me. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. He says, I take care of My devotee. But as soon as My devotee becomes proud, as soon as he becomes complacent, as soon as he begins to feel that he has it all coming to him, that he deserves it, that he's worthy of it, that he should have it. As soon as he begins to feel that he's superior to other devotees, that he's above them, he's greater than them. I'm a better singer. I'm a better Sanskrit chanter. I'm a better offerer of the flowers or the incense to the deities. I dress the deities better than this person. I give better classes than this person. As soon as a person begins to think in this smug, complacent, superior fashion, what happens? What happens is that the Lord begins to withdraw His mercy or His grace from that devotee. It happens little by little by little. And as I said, I saw many wonderful, great devotees who became so proud. This could be us. Anytime we have an ability, anytime we outshine someone, anytime people praise us, anytime people glorify us, anytime people honor us, we are in a vulnerable position. And we can deal with that by simply understanding and realizing that all this ability, all this opulence, all this glory is coming strictly and only from the mercy of Krishna. It's coming from Him. Krishna says, I am the ability in man. So He's simply releasing to us a little of His ability. Krishna says, know that all opulent, beautiful, and glorious creations spring from but a spark of My splendor. What need is there for all these details? With a single fragment of Myself, I pervade and support this entire universe. So Krishna is saying that whatever beauty, whatever opulence, whatever greatness, whatever is honorable in you is coming from Me. If we remember this and we feel grateful as a result of Krishna's mercy, then Krishna continues to give us mercy. He pours it into the soul. And the soul, as I said, like a lotus, when it's exposed to the sunshine, it opens up. Similarly, the soul feeling that mercy in the form of transcendental peace, in the form of transcendental bliss and strength and freedom and love and its overall inner happiness. And the more appreciative, the more humble, the more submissive, the more the devotee feels beholden to the Lord, that he doesn't deserve all that he's receiving, the more Krishna loads him with grace. But as he said, as soon as the devotee begins to forget that this is coming from Krishna, and he begins to think that, yes, it's coming from my endeavor, my effort, my action, he's starting to fall. In spiritual life, there is no this thing as status or status. You either are going up or you're going down. There's no happy medium where you stay. When we take this position of total dependence, Krishna says, in all activities, always depend upon Me. In all activities, just depend upon Me. And how does that go? And thank you. And always work under My protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of Me. So Krishna is saying, He's giving us the key to our salvation, the key to His constant protection,
the key to never falling down. Depending upon Him. A child depends upon its mother because it feels helpless. We as devotees are adults, so the tendency of an adult is to never feel helpless because we're adults. We can do for ourselves. We can earn money for ourselves. We have skills. We have competence. People praise us. People may honor us. People respect us. Well, I'm an adult. Why should I feel helpless? Why should I be dependent? Now, that's the real secret. To be able to manipulate two different aspects of personality. The inner personality is a total dependence. I have no strength. I have no power. I have no ability. I have nothing outside of what Krishna lovingly, kindly gives me in response to my desperation. Desperation, yes, because as I speak this very moment, many people have died. Many people who thought they were going to live many, many years hence, they've died. I could die sitting right on this Vyasasan. In fact, one of our spiritual masters, he died, he left his body while sitting on the Vyasasan. Wasn't that Gaur Govinda Maharaj? Or no, was it Gaur Govinda Maharaj? Huh? Who was giving class? Yeah. So there, it can happen at any time. Is that the right, do I have the right name? Oh, Gaur Govinda Maharaj, yes, thank you. So that can happen at any given time. Understanding that death can come at any moment, at any second, we have to treasure every moment and utilize it in loving affection for Krishna, loving devotion to Krishna, loving appreciation to Krishna, feeling that we have gotten such a benediction, such a grace, such a blessing that our heart should be almost exploding with appreciation. And if we have that attitude, Krishna guarantees our protection. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly, Krishna says. The reward is His closeness, His presence, His nearness, His closeness, Himself. That is His reward. And there is no greater reward in the entire world, because to have the nearness, the closeness, the dearness of Krishna, you have everything. You are complete. And when you look outside and you see a tree, or you see a bird, or you see another human being, you feel complete attunement with them. Because once the soul feels its connection with Krishna, it feels its connection with all souls, because all souls are connected with Krishna, even though those souls may not know this or may be blind to this. But one who has been awakened to it and is enlightened to it feels a connection, a nearness, and a closeness with all souls. And for that reason, she does not want to be antagonistic, because everyone feels like a brother and a sister. And this is really what the reality is. We're all brothers and sisters, but as soon as I identify myself with my body, and I feel that with this body I have to lord it over your body, I have to be your controller, I have to be your dominator, I have to be your tutor, your director, as soon as I feel that's necessary, this is material consciousness. But as when I look at you and I say, ah, here is a person whom I can serve as love offering to Krishna. Krishna says, whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, do this as an offering unto me. He says, do it for me. So when a devotee who has been enlightened even a little bit sees another devotee or another human being, his first response is, how can I serve him? How can I bring him closer to Krishna? How can I awaken him? How can I intensify his devotion to Krishna? That's his only interest. He himself feels useless, worthless, insignificant. But he prays to Krishna, and prayer is such an important part of developing this, what I was speaking of, this inner strength that can resist all allurements, all attractions, all sinful beckonings. If we have that inner strength that Krishna gives us, nothing can corrupt us, nothing can destroy us. But if we think we are already strong, we're already powerful, we have so many people have praised us, so many people have applauded us, so many people have glorified us, well, why do I have to pray? I'm doing okay without praying. And then the mercy starts to get withdrawn. And once the mercy is more and more withdrawn, what is the result? The result is you feel empty. You feel vacuous. There is no joy within. There is no peace within. There's no strength within. There's no love within. So what do? The soul knows it's supposed to be joyful. Well, if it's not feeling the inner joy, the inner peace, the inner strength, then it has to get it someplace. And it gets it outside. Outside. Sense pleasure with the genitals. Sense pleasure through the ears. Sense pleasure through the nose. Sense pleasure through the tongue. Sense pleasure through the skin. It gets its pleasure. And through that attachment to the different pleasures, it gradually sinks down, 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 until it no longer wants to even be involved in spiritual life anymore. It doesn't have a taste for it anymore. So the secret of staying on this path and advancing on this path is becoming attached to Krishna and becoming detached from all the externals which allure us and promise us a good time when actually it's a tragic time. If we become attached to Krishna, and Srila Prabhupada makes this point over and over again, give up your attachment to the material world. But giving it up is not that easy. It's not just like, okay, I have it, now I'll just give it up. The more we pray to Krishna, humbly, desperately, crying out, calling out like a child crying out for its mother, the more Krishna, like a loving mother, comes and gives us that mercy, or that, you might say, like a mother gives her milk to a child, Krishna gives us the milk of spiritual enlightenment. And that milk of spiritual enlightenment enables us to have the strength, the resistance, so that if you see some situation the way Ajamil did, you know immediately you have to get out of there. You don't consent to allowing thoughts about those things to percolate or proliferate in the mind. You don't allow it. You stop it immediately because you know it will harm you and it will ultimately destroy the spiritual life. So in that understanding, this is where we have to go. Our goal should become to be attached more and more to Krishna. Attachment comes not only by our efforts, but as a result of the proper mood, the proper attitude, the proper understanding, and the proper appreciation. Krishna bestows his grace right into the soul. The soul feels stronger, it feels capable, it feels reverential, it feels devotional, and consequently it feels closer and acts in the way which Krishna wants it to act. So, I'll stop there. Thank you very much for your attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Are there any questions or any comments that anyone would like to make? Yes, Prabhu. Someone bring the mic for you.
Thank you for your nice class. I was just wondering, we often say, we often hear that in spiritual life there's no such thing as stasis. We are either going up or going down. I'm not aware that there's actually a Shastric reference for that. I'm just wondering if you have one.
I believe I heard it in one of the talks of Srila Prabhupada at some time. But I don't remember seeing it in the actual books, but I thought I had heard it in one of the classes, that we never stay in one spot in spiritual life. If we neglect, we go down, and if we do all the things that we're supposed to do with the proper attitude and understanding, then we go up. And I believe I heard that in a talk, perhaps not in the exact words that I'm phrasing it, but in that understanding. And quite often Prabhupada would make an accompanying comment that you should never waste a moment, because once that moment is wasted, you can't get it back. So utilize every moment to go upward rather than utilizing your moments to go downward. In other words, when you're indifferent, when you're just gossiping, when you're wasting time, we're not going upward. We're going downward. And if we are utilizing our time, then we are going upward. So it's when we think that there's no harm in just speaking nonsense, prajalpa, and all of these things, we think that, well, what's the difference, you know? 5-10 minutes, then it becomes 5-10 hours. It can become a habit. And that's what I mean, that you initially, at that moment, you may not be going down. But then what happens is, as it gets going, as I said, prajalpa, indifference, complacence, all these bad qualities begin to take over and we go down. So that's the best I can offer on that. I think it was from a number of talks that Prabhupada has given. Any other questions? Oh, yes, Manasa. Somebody have the microphone for us? Well, wait a minute, because the people on the internet, they want to hear what you have to say. What happened to it? No, I know, but they... What has happened to the microphone? Somebody locked it, okay. Talk loud. I'll repeat your question. Go ahead. The devotion was what? Slack. There are no accidents in spiritual life. There's a cause and effect, action and reaction going on all the time. And Srila Prabhupada set the perfect example for all of us. And he showed us how to chant, and he showed us the attitude that we should have towards the Lord and towards the spiritual master. The problem is that one starts out being humble, he achieved the position, and then he begins to believe that he is that position. That identification is his fall, beginning of his fall down. He should always think that I'm not what everybody thinks I am. This is something, it's like I'm not this dhoti. It's just over me. Okay? And it's people identify me as brahmachari as a result of it. But I'm not any of these things. I'm simply a spiritual soul, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And my business is to simply serve the Lord lovingly and dependently. The fact is, we forget that. And it is this forgetfulness, and I can't tell you how many times Srila Prabhupada uses this term, forgetfulness. The living entity forgets what he's supposed to do. The devotee forgets how he's supposed to feel. And if he forgets that, then he is setting the stage for himself to become to fall down. He sets the stage. Well, yes, but that's true. And let me say this, that falling down is not the worst thing in the world. Because, let me finish. So, falling down is not the worst thing. It's not picking yourself up that is the worst thing. You see. So, falling down has its root. It has its root in egotism. It has its root in being wanting to lord it over. And I saw, here's the most important point, is that you get into a position, and then what happens is that you start committing offenses against devotees, even though you know you're not supposed to. And then you have friends who back up your offense. That's the worst thing. And then they fall down also because they back you up because they want your friendship. So, yeah. So the point is this, is that, and then not only offenses, but then desires for external things start arising. So when you get it all together, one begins to, his spiritual life becomes more of a show than an actual inward crying out for the mercy to draw close to Krishna. The more that our spiritual life becomes show business, the less spiritual we're becoming. And that's all I can say. And I know many devotees that come involved with in their kirtans, they were playing for the applause. They were forgetting that it was for Krishna. That this is for Krishna. This is to please him. Also to please devotees too. But it should have no bearing for my getting praise or my getting glorified or my being applauded. That should not even be a thought. So a lot is on us. We have to work these things out. And as I said, a fall down is not the worst thing in the world. What is worse is to not pick yourself up, not realize why you fell down, and not take constructive, counteractive measures. So I think we've gone way over right now. And I thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada Ki. I didn't think we went that far.